Welcome one and all once again to Dual World in episode 157. One of those rare days where we're actually coming to you day of recording, because it's been a long week. Joining me this week we have Martin.
Hello!
And we have Daniel.
Hi!
And it's been a fun-filled week, which we'll get to in a bit. But we're going to kick it off with some impressions. And I'm going to be totally selfish because I get to control this stuff, and I'm just going to do the... I've played about a half a dozen games at New York Comic Con this past week, and I want to talk about those real quick. I just want to mention that I kind of understand why, but it's really sad. It does seem like the East Coast, as far as the East Coast of the United States goes, is getting the short end of the stick when it comes to video games, because a lot of the big companies also skipped out on PAX East. And now a lot of the companies skipped out on New York Comic Con this year. There was none of the big three did. Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft weren't there. Activision wasn't there. Ubisoft, all you had Just Dance, and you could pre-order Assassin's Creed if you wanted to.
Wait. You could pre-order the game at the convention?
Oh, have you never been to a convention where they do this?
No. That's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. They've done it several years in a row. You can pre-order from GameStop and Amazon usually, and they have like some perk there. Like I think for Assassin's Creed, not this year. I didn't pre-order this year. Last year, you got like a Far Cry 3 mug, and an Assassin's Creed a T-shirt. I always make sure to order from Amazon because it reminds me. It sends me an email, so once I get home, I cancel it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So they had that. Capcom did the same thing. I got a Resident Evil Reservations 2 poster for pre-ordering. Just real quick aside, funny story. You know, like the wrist brigade that they have in Assassin's Creed. I guess The booth attendants had that, and some guy tried to scare me with it, and I didn't react. And he's like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "Oh, I didn't know that people throwing knives at me was supposed to be scary. It happens all the time in this city." he was really sad about that. He's like, "Oh, everybody else gets freaked out or react to it. You did nothing." I'm like, "It's a knife. What am I going to do?" At that point, you're going to stab me or you're not. Ubisoft, you had a Just Dance booth. Capcom had Monster Hunter. They had Resident Evil Revelations 2. And I think they had... Ubisoft also had Tetris Ultimate, which looked awful. From what I heard, it doesn't... Somehow you screwed up Tetris. I don't know how you do that.
Oh, jeez.
Bandai Namco had Lords of the Fallen. They had Dark Souls 2 DLC. Mm. They had Pac-Man and the Goshi Adventures 2. They had Digimon All-Star Rumble. They had... Power Rangers Super Mega Force, nothing too special, and that was pretty much it. I got to dip my toes in a few of the mobile games there as well, but mobile games come in like three different designs now. It's the Match 3 puzzle,
mm-hmm.
It's the tap or hold your screen so your character goes up and down,
mm-hmm.
And it's the Endless Runner, and I got to play all three of those types of games at the convention.
No, you actually forgot one. It's the Clash of Clans.
Ah, okay.
That's also a thing that still happens.
I didn't see any of those there.
Oh.
But yeah, I played some of those. One was a very addictive Vita game, which meant it had very Asian, very young looking Asian women. There was one that was BioWars, which was... It's an Endless Runner that had shooting mechanics that I didn't get. Like, I got the shooting mechanics, but I didn't get the threat. Like, none of the enemies were attacking me. They just kind of drove by the screen. So I don't know if it was just because it was a demo or whatever. And then there was a fish one, which just controlled awful for one of those hold the screen and make your characters move up and down. Anyhow, it was not a great year for gaming. I guess the one positive, and I'll start there, is I went to a Square Enix event ahead of the show on Wednesday, and I got to check out Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris. I don't know. I think both of you played Guardians of the Light.
Yeah.
And this is basically Guardians of the Light 2, and the major difference, and it's not even a difference, is that now it's four-player co-op, and what it looks like they did with that, instead of making four distinct characters, is it's literally just two types of characters. Like, the first game, you had Lara Croft, and then you had the Guardian, and then they each had a special type of move. or abilities they could do. So this game, there are two human characters who have their own craft abilities, and then there's two god characters who have the same abilities. And when there's four-player co-op, it just means that there's two of them and two of them. In single-player, you can only play as your craft. In co-op, one person has to be a god craft, and one person has to be a god character. So it's only until there's three players where you can kind of mix and match the characters up. Pretty much, if you've played that, the original game, you've played this one. The only difference, I would say, and I'm hoping it's because it's a demo, the controls were awful. Well, not awful in that they didn't work, but awful in that the characters move stiffly. Like, sometimes you'll press the analog stick and they wouldn't move, and other times you'll press and they, like, jump across the screen. And I didn't like that. Like, it's for twin-stick shooter. I mean, that's the bulk of it. It's the movement. You want to make sure your characters can get in position and shoot well. And I felt like this wasn't really that tight, and the characters were jumping all over the screen. So it kind of drove me nuts. And like I said, I hope it's because it's a demo version, because it was even wired controllers. I can't even say it was like wireless interference or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, other than that, really fun.
Now you're making me even doubt if I will have any Tomb Raider related thing to look forward to.
I know.
That decision to have like just two character classes seems lazy to me.
Yeah, it does. Like, they're talking about, like, the first one was just two-player co-op, and like, oh, we made it four. I'm like, okay, now we're running. No, it's like, okay, the two human characters have, like, the grapple hook, so they can grapple up to things, and they can grapple down, you can climb up. They have the ability to, like, torches and stuff, but there's no differential between the two. And then the two god characters can create shields, and, like, you can use the shield, like, when, you know, like, they have, like, arrows being projected at you, you can use it to protect yourself and the person, like, the human characters can run behind you. Or you can use your bubble as a way for them to, like, jump to higher places by jumping on top of you. Or you can raise platforms and stuff like that. But that's with the two characters, so there's nothing different. It's like two sets of characters, so it's just basically two-player co-op expanded to four characters.
Well, I assume it's probably done this way so you can still easily play alone, but still, I think maybe you could have found a better solution for that.
Yeah, I understand, and it's also weird. I understand it would be weird not to play as her since it's her game. It's also weird that they restrict you to your craft in the single player, because essentially they just combine their abilities. I don't see why you couldn't give another character that ability to do the same thing in single player. While I was there, I also checked out Dragon Quest on the iOS, but I don't know why they had it. Dragon Quest VIII's already out. Dragon Quest II came out the day after, and then I think they had 1, 3, and 4. They made some interesting conceits to those games. Basically, they play themselves. You just go into battle, and you can kind of have them auto-battle for you. So, I don't get that purpose. The one game that really did catch my eyes, and I didn't get a chance to play it because whoever was manning the station wasn't there during my session, was Life is Strange.
Mm-hmm. What is that? And do you even know what that is? Because
no, that's why it caught my attention, because the setup was like, it was like a girl's room. They had a room, they had a beanbag chair, they had pictures on the walls. It was like the TV was set up to be an actual TV with like a DVD player and stuff like that. And I was like, what is this game? And I was so disappointed. I didn't get a chance to play it. But it really intrigued me. Really intrigued me. So yeah, that was Square Enix. Aside from that, I spent a lot of time at Namco's booth because they were the only ones who had games that I was kind of semi-interested in. Well, not that I'm not interested in Resident Evil Revelations, but there's already you can already play the first one, and you kind of know what to expect. And I already know what to expect with Just Dance. And I went through my mobile games real quick. Okay, I'm just going to start off go from worst to best, I guess. Power Rangers Super Mega Force on the 3DS. I'm sure you expect such great things from a licensed video game. But I don't know. Beat 'em ups are a very delicate balance to get right. And at the same time, they're very simple. You press two buttons, something comes out, it looks amazing. This game has terrible controls. Like, it has a terrible hit detection. And maybe it was because I picked the wrong character. But, like, if you give me a beat-em-up where my character does not have automatic close-range attacks, that defeats the purpose. like, his weak attack was to throw a bomb, and the bomb wouldn't, like, throw in front. It would go in a distance. And then your strong attack is to shoot your blaster, which doesn't shoot directly. It shoots at angles, and then if you press it constantly, he spins around. So I spent half the time trying to figure out how to fight people in front of me. I can do it if they're a distance away, but if they're immediately in front of me, there's no quick way to do that that I found. So that was a pain in the ass. Digimon All-Star Rumble. You would think with the name like All-Star Rumble, it would be closer to like something like Smash Brothers, but it's actually, it reminds me of Power Stone in the sense that it's a 3D open world beat-em-up. The only problem, the biggest problem I have with it was actually that they have, there's no dodge, evade, or parry attack. So like once your character gets stuck in a combo, you're pretty much stuck getting beat up until that happens. Or vice versa, if you're beating somebody up, you're pretty much stuck doing that until they fall down. And I thought like this just kind of breaks the game. There's no fun because it's like whoever gets there, because it's basically just keep on tapping the same button over and over again, and you'll get somebody trapped in like a 10-hit combo. So whoever gets this first, and your dodge, your block only works if you're staying still, and you block before the person attacks. So they would see that. And I'm surprised that there's no like dodge roll, there's no evade, there's no parry, there's no counter system at all. Once your little magic meter fills up, you can digivolve. And as far as I know, it just made you a bigger target and stronger. I don't know if anything else came of it. They really should have people explaining these games sometimes at this station. Mm-hmm. I was also disappointed I won and I didn't get my free t-shirt because they ran out. So that's my that's my pity rant for the day.
I didn't get you your free marketing t-shirt.
Damn!
I'm always
I know.
To be fair, those t-shirts are great for sort of just lounging around on a Sunday in.
Well, it depends, because some of them, like, I got a Lego Batman 3 t-shirt. But it's too small for me, because they, you know, they just kind of give out a medium size, so everybody kind of. And I'm like, yeah, this is great, but I can never wear it because I can't squeeze into this. I did play Lego Batman 3, but I didn't want to say anything about it because if you've played a Lego game before, you pretty much know what to expect from this. Which, at this point, is good or bad, depending on your taste. I then played Pac-Man and the Goshi Adventures 2, which borrows from Super Mario Galaxy. Now Pac-Man has the ability to kind of like walk upside down on walls. And I played a very simple level that was more frustrating than it needed to be because the game has this weird mechanic where you can walk on top of the walls, but if you jump, it doesn't necessarily attach back to that wall because the gravitational pull doesn't work both ways, I guess, which makes no sense because if you're on that wall and you're stuck, if you jump, it should continue to carry you or pick you back up and you shouldn't fall down. And once you're falling down, you can't jump back up to get attached. So if you fall, you have to go all the way back to the little maze and start over again. It's more frustrating than fun. It seems like I came out of Namco's booth where you're just down on all the games they showed off. And the last game they showed, the last game I got to play anyhow was Order to Fall In, which as far as I can tell is Dark Souls, which is odd because they published that already.
It's made by a different company.
That's
the thing.
It's just gameplay-wise very similar. I talked about that game. I played at the Gamescom.
Yeah, it's just weird because I thought it was Dark Souls because they do have Dark Souls on display there as well. And I'm like, oh, maybe they're creating. They publish Dark Souls, so they don't really need to have the same game in the same. But if it works for them, it works for them. So all in all, it was not a great time for video games at this year's Comic-Con. I was extremely disappointed by that. Especially being that you would think with the fall season and these new consoles on the market, you'd have people showcasing some of their big titles. But then again, I mean, I don't think Assassin's Creed has ever been there. Call of Duty wouldn't make sense, I guess. It's just really hard for people to justify the cost for so few games when they probably aren't seeing the returns they're getting. It's just disappointing. Okay, let's go with Daniel, because I want to hear what you've been playing.
So I have played Alien Isolation, which is kind of one of this week's kind of big thing, I guess. And, it's really cool. I don't see really what anybody has a problem with. I mean, I haven't played a whole lot of it, but it seems to be the alien game that people have needed and wanted for a long time. So, if you don't know what Alien Isolation is, it's a survival horror game, kind of, I guess. I don't know whether they officially class it as that, but it plays like one. Where you play as Ellen Ripley's daughter Amanda, and you're stuck on a ship called the Sevastopol, and there is one alien in it, and it is out to kill you. You also encounter synthetics, which are really creepy because they're not the Weyland-Yutani ones that look like people. They look like walking mannequins, and they have red eyes, and they're really creepy when they speak. And it plays how you think a survival horror game set in the universe should. You know, you can crawl under tables, you can get into vents and crawl around in vents, you can hide in lockers, you get a motion tracker, which people can hear, by the way, so obviously important uses of that. There's some cool features as well where when you have the when you have the motion tracker out, it changes the depth of field, so you're concentrating on the motion tracker, but you can also change it back, so the motion trackers are blurry, but you can see like the rest, everything else quite clearly, which is really cool. It's very tense. It's basically all built on stealth, and you know, obviously the main issues seem to be with the saving system, and I don't see it. Like, the save stations are a little infrequent, but I had no problem with finding a save station, using it, and they take about 10 seconds or so to use, and you can be killed while using one. Go and do a thing, and if you think that you've done something significant, go back to a save station that you know is safe. You know? I don't really see much of a problem with it. Unless you play on hard, because then it's instant kill. All the enemies instant kill you. But yeah, it's a really good game. It looks really nice, especially if you play it on PC and crank all the graphics up. I don't see what people's problems with it are. I mean, I haven't played all of it, so I don't know how the pacing is in the long run.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of curious about, because a lot of people have said that it starts off strong, but it doesn't necessarily have enough content, or it becomes too gamey by the end of it, because like you've mentioned, like, it feels like a survival horror game, but apparently near the back half of it, it becomes more of an action game.
Yeah, I don't know about that yet, but I'll be able to tell you in a couple of weeks. The beginning starts off really nicely. Unlike most games based on the franchise, where you're just like, oh, there's an alien in the first 20 minutes. It takes you a good couple of hours to see the alien for the first time, which is really nice. And before then, you've got to deal with other people that aren't particularly kind to your presence and stuff. So it's nice. The beginning part, the beginning few levels at the very least, are paced very well. So we'll have to see how that develops. Aside from that, I haven't really played anything.
Okay. Martin?
I have played some Drive Club, which I talked about.
Did you play the full version or the PlayStation? Wait, the PlayStation Plus version isn't out yet, is it?
No, it's not out yet. I played the full version, of course. I liked what I played at Gamescom, so I wanted to get that game. And I'm really enjoying it. I mean, the driving is really nice. The game has a real good sense of speed, especially if you play like from the hood cam or in cockpit view. When you get to like the really fast cars, like the super and hyper cars, it's like at times really terrifying to actually drive down the straight, because it just gets so fast, and if the road is a bit bumpy, it seems like you can lose control of your car at any moment, which is kind of cool in a game like this. So the real issue I have right now, which kind of everyone is having right now, is that they have real server issues. So the whole connected aspect, club aspect, playing multiplayer, all that
half
stuff doesn't work, basically. Maybe at times you can get lucky and connect, and then it's pretty cool, because you can actually do multiplayer matches or get these challenges. Well, actually you can't get challenges, because they deactivated those completely at this point. And yeah, that's just sad, because all that's left right now is the single player, which is fine, it's fun, it's just nothing special in the sense that it's, you pick your event, it's maybe a cup or a single race, and then you also have challenges, like you can get up to 3 stars in a race, for example, before finishing in the top 3, then doing a lap time in such and such, and maybe passing a drift challenge or something like that. So that stuff is fine and fun, it's just nothing special, extraordinary in a sense. I mean, nothing we haven't seen before from arcade races. So it's really sad that all the connected stuff is not working at this point, which I think would make the game even better.
Yeah, it was a big part of the selling. I mean, it is half the name. It is Drive Club. It's not Drive.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of people complain about that, especially being that I think the biggest problem now is that since you now pay for PlayStation Plus, people expect more from the service.
Well, this is not related to the Sony service, though. This is
apparently
it's a bug that the Drive Club people apparently didn't squash, and it's causing people to make more connections to the Drive Club servers, and that's overloading them.
Well, on the bright side, even though I don't think anything's going to come of it, I think they also said that they're looking into it and they're looking into possibly compensating people for it?
Yeah.
They're considering compensation.
How about you compensate people for not having a buggy as shit game?
Well, I mean, at this point, we kind of expect it, which is kind of sad. Like, when something like Destiny goes off without a hitch, people don't talk about it because it's the exception. And it's like, oh yeah, we got an online game that works.
Yep.
I honestly didn't even hear about the Drive Club stuff until you mentioned it. Like, I don't see anybody talking about it. I just assumed it was business. I think that's part of it, but I thought it was business as usual because I haven't really heard. Like, I heard people complaining about the PlayStation Network, especially being that I think it's down for maintenance sometime today.
Yeah.
As well, and that's the type of stuff people are kind of pissed off about because they do pay for. But I didn't hear Drive Club itself had problems with it. But it is nice that you are enjoying the game. I'm kind of curious to hear, because this was part of the reviews. Does it have the personality?
I don't know what people are talking about when they talk about personality in a racing game. I have no fucking clue. The only game I can think of with some kind of personality in a racing game, it's maybe Mario Kart and Burnout, and that's it.
Well, if you think about it, I think every game.
I would say Need for Speed as
every
well.
Every game has like a theme to it that's unique. So I mean, Dirt is a rally game. It's a proper rally game, and you have GT, which is all about being a simulation and letting you tweak things. And then sometimes you get a really weird thing like being able to drive buggies on the fucking moon. You know, that's what they're talking about. Something that just sets it apart from everything else, because if the whole gimmick of the game, I'm not sure if this is true or not, if the whole gimmick of the game is you can set up a thing where you can race with your friends, well, I can do that in any racing game.
The club is more than that.
Well, I'm kind of curious about that, because especially with people,
because
I can't
believe this. The club thing, the idea of the club is more that it's kind of like taking the autolog to the next level with challenges and having stuff appear during your race, even. Like,
yeah,
you can get into a specific corner in a race, then it says, like, hey, your friend or someone has had a drift score of this year. Maybe you can try and beat it.
Yeah, I was about to say, because I've heard comparisons to, and God help me that this is a term, the drivatars? Is that what they're called?
Yes, the drivatars are a thing, but I don't know how those relate to Drive Club, but continue.
No, because that's the comparison I heard, because isn't that the same idea, like, you pop up and, like, your friends will be in the race with you, and you get to race against them, or it's
no,
kind
no,
of...
No, no, but driver tasks are just that VAI copies behavior of real people.
Oh, okay.
That's what driver tasks are.
See, even then, that kind of sounds more interesting because people always complain about AI, so it makes sense that if you mimic actual humans...
Except
but even then
that people complain about Forza 5 or all the AI, then driving like absolute assholes.
Well, this is why I've never got the arguments with better AI, because, yeah, if you modeled AI after actual human people, you're either going to get really dumb AI or really sophisticated AI, which makes it hard to play a game if they are unpredictable. You kind of want something in between, which is what video games tend to do. They tend to give you a routine, highly predictable AI, which is, I also hear a problem with DriveCraft, though. Again, these are all from reviews where like, a lot of the races, AI drivers kind of drive on a set path, and sometimes they don't necessarily account for where you're driving, and that can screw you up.
I have rarely encountered that even, to be honest, so I don't think those reviewers played that game very well.
Wow, that could be the case. This is, we ask you questions
there's,
and you give
there's
us
There's also thought. A nice video out there of someone who showed off the Drive Club AI and how it actually drives around you should you be in the way of the AI. But apparently no one tested that except that guy.
Well, I mean, to be fair, and I think we'll kind of segue into this, because I wanted to talk about this, and we'll talk about this in relation to Bayonetta as well, is that reviewers are kind of given this really dubious task of kind of reviewing, especially this time of the year, dozens of games in a short amount of time. So a lot of them probably don't get to learn the systems as well as somebody like you who would probably get to sit down and play it at your leisure. And it does suck because there are things that are missed. And I mean, my favorite example, I think, is from IGN and Sonic and the Black Knight, mm-hmm. where they missed half the game.
It's pretty good. I've not heard that before, but it's pretty good.
Oh, have you not? Because what happened was apparently, and I can kind of see why, but the game has like it ends halfway through and it rolls the credits. And then what happens is like it's a fake credit, and then the whole second half of the game opens up, and they stopped their review at the first credits and didn't review anything beyond that.
Ah, no, I think I heard that.
Yeah. So that, but though, to be fair, that should be something that probably should have come in the review notes. Because I can understand if you see the credits roll, you would think that would be the end of a game. I mean, if the credits rolled in a movie, you would think that would be the end of the movie as well.
Yep.
You wouldn't even in the Avengers, you're not going to expect a Captain America 2 to end with a whole separate movie after the credits. Maybe a scene or two, but yeah. I only bring this up partially because there's an article on Forbes today complaining about the fact that Nintendo has set the embargo for Bayonetta 2 too far in advance for them. They felt that it was too soon for reviews for a game that comes out in a week and a half. And I'm like, and in my head, I kind of agree with him in the sense that I do think it's weird. I mean, because, you know, you can't go out and buy it. You can just read the reviews and you can't do anything about it for 2 weeks. I kind of get that. At the same time, people were complaining about having all this crunch time. And this company's like, you know what? We're going to give you all the time in the world. You don't have to put your review up today. You can literally play it until October 24th, you get an extra 2 weeks if you want to review it day of. And to complain about the fact that a company is actually giving you the chance to review a game early instead of like for example, The Evil Within is out tomorrow, and there are no major reviews out except for the video gamer who ended up having to buy a copy of the game so they didn't have to stick to the embargo.
Well, also because Bethesda didn't want to send them a review copy.
Bethesda blacklisted them because they gave a less than favorable review to a previous game. That's why they didn't get a review copy.
Possibly. They never got a reason from Bethesda.
I mean, if you're a website, I would be so pissed off because they get... you could go out and buy this game and review it tonight and you'd still be up before any of these major websites.
I probably could have bought the game on Friday if I wanted to.
Yeah. and but you're waiting for reviews.
Yeah.
I understand review embargoes even though I don't like them. I don't get why you would continue a review embargo beyond the release date. Like, once this game's out at midnight, I don't see why you would hold on to your review.
I know why you would. I know why you would extend an embargo beyond the release date.
Oh yeah,
because you've got a shitty fucking game.
Well, here's the problem with that, and the problem is that I remember a few years ago I complained to a Game Informer editor about this, and they were like, "Oh, you know what? It's a one-off thing. If it ever becomes standard, we're going to fight back against it." And then one-off thing became a two-off thing to the point where almost every game is a review day embargo nowadays. Destiny was a review day embargo.
I would give that one a pass.
Evil Within's a review day embargo. I think Titanfall was early, I think.
Duke Nukem Forever was out a whole weekend in Europe before the reviews were out in America. Most of the outlets are American.
Yeah, it's so weird that people have to go through this. Like, really, once the game is available for purchase, I think any review embargo is off the table, because you can literally just say, I'm reviewing this as a consumer at that point.
Yeah.
Before actual professional reviewers. I don't get why people stick to these. Like, one, I think it's shady as hell, which is why I don't necessarily pre-order games anymore. I don't really pre-order games in general, but I don't pre-order them anymore because I do want a general consensus on it. There are certain games that I'll probably get anyhow, like Captain Toad, without any reviews. But I know the team's pedigree, and I know the game. But at the same time, it seems like we've just moved more and more towards the fact that reviews come out the day of the game, where you can't even say it's going to be a bad game anymore because every other game's doing it now. Like, if it was one, like, if a movie does it, if a movie has no reviews until Friday, most people say this is going to be a terrible movie because they're not shown any advanced screenings.
Surprise! Industry based on pre-purchases and industry secrecy wants to keep things secret until the game comes out.
Yeah, but my thing is, why stick to it? Like, again, I understand not wanting to be blacklisted for breaking embargo. Like, I wouldn't, like, if you put it up Saturday, I can understand that's breaking it. But once a consumer can buy the product, review embargo should be off the table, because at that point it becomes a consumer product. You can review it as an independent consumer.
As far as I'm concerned, right, this just ties into back into kind of the state that the game's journalism thing is in anyway, which is to say the adverts are powered by the websites are powered by adverts and therefore powered by hits. And if you get blacklisted by a publisher, that means they're going to withdraw advertising on your website as well. And if you don't, if you risk blacklisting, and also if you get blacklisted, it means you have to pay $60 a game. And if 10 games come out in the space of a month, which is not unlikely considering the way the games industry likes to release its games, that's you paying $600 for 10 things that you need to have a review and have content up for on day one, otherwise nobody wants to see.
Yeah, and this kind of goes to the circular logic of why people have problems with video game journalism. But on that note, and this doesn't necessarily in our news segment, but I mean, I guess we might as well talk about it here, is we did have the proclamation from something
can
at Kotaku this week.
We got off on a real tangent. I still wanted to say something about Drive Club.
Oh, okay.
Which was, I wanted to end with actually saying, like, I think it's a good game. I don't think it's great. If I had to grade it right now, assuming all that community stuff works later on, I would say it's probably a solid 7 out of 10.
Which is what it's reviewing at.
Yeah, some outliers, I think, but...
I mean, that's what Metacritic's for. Like, that's what I use Metacritic for. Like, the general consensus, it's about a 7. I would say I do think, I understand why, especially with them having problems, but I do think it's especially shady that they delayed the PlayStation Plus version, because essentially that was a demo.
It's
and
not
by the
shady end, in the sense that they had this connection issue, and if you had more people with the PlayStation Plus version, both problems
The thing is,
Sony
has clearly lost some trust because they were like, yeah, you get Drive Club for free, and then they delayed Drive Club an entire year. And it's like, oh yeah, you get a demo. It's it.
Well, I mean, it's
no, but it was always the PlayStation Plus version. It was always called PlayStation Plus version. No one just knew what that entailed as.
No, like I said, I completely get the server issues, but to be fair, the server issues wouldn't have been there. Like, the server issues weren't known at launch, or they shouldn't, if they were
at launch. Immediately, the day the game was out, the server was not working.
But what I'm saying is, like, if Sony had known that before, that's kind of shady as hell. But I understand now, like, you don't want to say, oh, you're giving people free games before you fix the problems of people who paid for it got or haven't. That I completely get now. But it is kind of weird. That said, I guess really quickly to wrap up our impressions, and like I was saying, this was going
to
jump off.
I still have a game to talk about.
Oh, what game were you going to talk about?
I'm also been playing Styx Master of Shadows.
Why have I heard of that? Is it a sequel?
How is that? I've seen a couple of people playing it.
Nah, it's actually a prequel to a game called Of Orcs and Men, which was an RPG by, I think, Spider. It's kind of published by Focus Entertainment. It's kind of like, not low budget, but it's in this B tier of games, right? And that game apparently was like pretty mediocre from what I've heard. And Styx Master of Shadows takes one of the characters from that game, Styx, the goblin, who's the thief and murderer, and puts him into a stealth game. And it's a prequel, like I said, to that other game. And so far, I really like it, because it harkens back to the old Thief games, in the sense that they only give you so many items you can use. There's very few items. If you use them, you have to either get new ones once you start the new missions, or you have to find them in the environment or steal them off guards. And the other thing is that's great from Thief is that it has really big levels that give you lots of freedom and lots of ways you can tackle the objective at hand. They make one thing easier in finding your main objective. You can have an objective marker, but if you don't want that, you can also deactivate it. So otherwise, doing all the side objectives is completely up to you. So you have to get through these huge environments that are very vertical and stuff. Try not to be found, because getting found is not something you want to do, because these enemies hit hard. Basically, the game doesn't even have a real combat system. As soon as you get found, someone will run up to you, and then you are stuck in combat, and all you can do is parry their attacks. And once you parry often enough, you can kill the guards. Otherwise, there is no real combat in this game. So all you want to do is basically sneak around and kill guys. So not getting found is what you actually want to do. And so in that sense, it's a really old-school stealth game that's pretty hardcore. And not easy. And I still enjoy that. I really like stealth games. People that want, like, a game and if you are found, you just kill the five guards who found you or something, this is probably not the game for you. Absolutely not. This is a game where you have to sneak, you have to be patient, you have to be observant of your environment, and try to get your objectives done. Also, I think it's an interesting scenario in that I have not played that of Orcs and Men game, so I'm not quite sure what all the lore is and stuff, but it seems like you are the only goblin, and humans don't even know that goblins exist, so you're the first time they encounter someone like you, which is kind of cool. So it's kind of interesting to see these interactions. Also interesting that you apparently pay the bad guy, but maybe not. It's not even quite sure why I'm after the Heart of the World Tree at this point. It seems like that the character himself doesn't even really know why. So there seems to be kind of a secret going on. It's pretty interesting overall. I'm really enjoying it right now.
Okay.
Also, it's what's pretty cool is it's only available downloadable, but it's not full price. I think right now on Steam it's like €23 something. On PlayStation Network it was €26, I think. So it's also not being sold for full price. I think after first week or something, I don't know how long the sale is going on, the full price will be $29.99 everywhere, which is still, it's a reduced price, but it absolutely is, like, so far I would say, like, content-wise, the same as you would have, like, a normal full-price retail game.
It sounds like it's okay. Really cool, I might have to look at it.
Yeah, maybe check out of Oxen Men as well.
Yeah.
Okay, just real quick, Bayonetta 2 demos on the Wii U eShop, which is always nice to have demos. Still not a fan of the demo limits, I don't know why those exist.
Because Nintendo doesn't know how to use the internet properly, and they never will at this rate.
Okay, but it's Bayonetta. If you've played Bayonetta before, it's more Bayonetta, so it's a super flashy, super fun action game. And I don't think anybody in the business does QTEs like Platinum Game does.
Or boss fights.
Or boss fights. I mean, they kind of go hand in hand because a lot of their QTEs are part of their boss fights. But not in a tedious way where it just seems like you have to get buttons correctly to prompt something. You do it during the action. But yes, really fun. I was surprised, really, that it held up on the Wii U gamepad. That was actually one of my biggest fears with it. Because a lot of Nintendo games tend to be kind of singular-focused as far as using a single analog stick, and mostly the face buttons and not necessarily the triggers. And this kind of uses every button available, except for the second analog stick, I believe.
Mm.
And it holds up really well. I found the controller to be extremely comfortable. I didn't seem to be missing anything. Nothing felt like it was going to break on me. I didn't have time to check out the touch controls before the show. I already played it today. But if you like Bayonetta, and if you want more Bayonetta, this is Bayonetta. And, I mean, I guess reviews kind of say as much. It's right now currently averaging a 90 plus on Metacritic. I don't know the exact number. So it's a fantastic game, a lot of content.
Shame it's on the Wii U only.
Where else would it be?
I mean, I know, but, like, people aren't going to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, nobody's going to buy it in general.
Yeah,
I mean, that was the problem with
no
the first
one was
bit.
Going to buy it on no matter which system it was coming out on.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's the problem. I mean, that's why it's on the Wii U. Nobody bought the first one. But, I mean, I'm happy for it because it's probably the best deal you're going to get in gaming this year, where you get Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2 for one flat price. And they're both fantastic action games. So if you're into that, more power to you. If you're one of the five people who owns a Wii U, even more power to you.
I always talked about Bayonetta 2 when I played Gamescom, and I really enjoyed that game. My demo was even longer, and I got to play it at a different level as well. And that one was also great, so I had no doubt that Bayonetta 2 was going to be good, to be honest.
Yeah.
Now that you mentioned QTAs, I want to say something about Shadow of Mordor. Because I finished that game at this point, right? And
yeah.
For some reason, they have a great combat system, they have a great stealth system, but for some reason, they felt the need that the last end boss had to be a QTE event.
Great.
What the fuck?
Which everybody does. I think we've had this discussion before. A lot of people don't know how to do boss battles in video games anymore, and I think it's because
exactly.
A lot of games aren't... And it's like one of those things that people kind of keep around because it's always been around, and it doesn't necessarily make sense for every game, but every game wants to include it, and a lot of times that's where they falter because they don't know how to make it logical in the sense of the video.
And I've been saying this for ages, forever. I've been saying this. I hate boss fights unless it's Bayonetta.
And I mean, to be fair, I'm assuming this is something else they borrow from Batman Arkham Series because they can't do boss battles either. They've gotten better with them.
I just don't understand. I mean, it was the same deal. I still remember Far Cry 3. They thought, like, they had to do a boss fight, which was a QTE event. I know, apparently they want to make those boss fights more epic than the normal system would allow, but I don't understand. They had a boss fight earlier in the game, which used the normal combat system. I don't know why they couldn't do that for the final boss. I really don't understand.
It's a shame. Games, like, there are certain games that work well with boss battles. RPGs are probably the biggest ones. And there's a ton of games, genres, that don't. And I think first-person shooters tend to be that one. Because I can't remember, like, a pure first-person shooter that has great boss battles. Like, I can think of, like, first-person-esque, like Borderlands and Metroid Prime. But those aren't pure first-person shooters, so they can kind of use their gamey hooks to make interesting boss battles. And even then, Borderlands has terrible final boss battles.
I don't think Borderlands has terrible final boss fights. I just think they're not interesting.
Which is bad boss fights to me.
I think the bad boss fights are ones that are just there for the sake of having a boss fight, whereas Borderlands is the kind of game that kind of suits it, because it's all about numbers and having weaknesses and, like,
I guess to me, well, we'll save this discussion for another day. I guess kind of dipping into news for this week. I don't think we talked about this last week. I don't think it was Smash Brothers Wii U finally got a release date. Surprising absolutely nobody. It's November 21st.
Delayed
a
week
for us,
in the European Union.
2 weeks.
2 weeks, even December better.
For no reason at all.
Reason is Europe. That is the reason.
Oh, yeah, right. It's Nintendo.
Well, I assume the reason is because they want to maximize sales for North America during Black Friday, and they probably just want to not all the shipments there for that week.
But we don't even get the same version. Because PAL and Nintendo.
Oh, no, I get that, but I assume as far as, like, shipping their games, they probably just want to, okay, we're just going to ship, like, 2 million to the States, and then we can focus on shipping elsewhere. But yes, November 21st for us, December 5th for you folks. Oddly enough, the Amiibos work differently for you folks, because we get Amiibos the day Smash Bros. Comes out, November 21st, but Amiibos come out November 28th for you, and then the game comes out a week later.
No,
I don't know what sense that makes.
Why?
Yeah, I still don't get what the toys do. So
from
I'm not, you know,
I
know people.
Smash Bros., the only thing they do is save AI thing that you can train.
Yeah, and it makes no sense. But I hear a lot of people on my timeline like, oh, I'm buying them all. I'm like, good for you. I still don't know why I should need these. Like, they look cool, but as far as the game goes, I'm going to wait until they're on a discount. More importantly, though, Captain Toad, Treasure Tracker got a release date for us. I believe that is December 5th for us. Mm. And you folks get it sometime in January, whatever.
January 9th, I think.
Whatever.
Because Europe and Nintendo.
But that I kind of got more as Nintendo having their one game a month policy. If they move Smash Brothers up to November, you could get it in December, but they didn't, so I don't know what to tell you. I'm okay with it because I get Captain Toad this year.
Yeah, I don't give a shit what you get.
I do.
I'm still angry at Nintendo because I don't think what they are doing is great. Every other fucking publisher in the world gets this shit right, except them.
Yeah, well, this is not like this is a unique conversation we've had with Nintendo, is it?
No, of course it's not.
We say this every bloody month.
But I don't know what the problem is that they can't get this right.
It's not the problem, there's no problem. The thing is, Nintendo refuses to do it right.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think there's anything about them not getting it right. I literally just think they choose not to. there's no reason that they could. Because, as far as I know, Smash Brothers is North America, then Japan, then Europe. So there's no reason. Like, they're doing Pokemon that same day. Worldwide.
Unless you're in Europe, and then you get it a few days later. For no reason.
Okay, so the rest of the world. the rest of the world gets it wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, someone like Activision can release one game worldwide on the same day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ubisoft released the two games on different platforms on the same day in every country.
Hey, like I said, it's...
Everyone can do that.
I don't get why, but if for one, you know, I'm on the good side of it, so usually I'm okay with it. Because it's not like we're getting Captain Toad next year. It's not like we're getting Smash Bros. Later. We're getting those first, so I'm good. First world countries rock. But aside from release date, Captain Toad also revealed that Toadette would be a
playable
character.
Did you just say that Europe doesn't have first world countries?
As far as Nintendo goes.
Anyhow, back to...
You can punch me in Super Smash Bros. December 5th in Europe. 2 weeks after I got the train.
I probably can. The online is probably trash.
I heard good things about the online as far as friend battles go. I hear nothing good about the random battles, though. And I'm actually surprised they didn't have like a Nintendo Direct or something for either of these games, because we still don't know what the Amiibos do in Smash for this as far as anything meaty, or and we don't know any of the exclusive Wii U modes and stuff like that. I'm surprised they didn't have something to...
I kind of assume they won't do anything meaty.
Oh, I assume they wouldn't, but you would think they'd kind of give them one final push where they kind of break it down and explain it or whatever. Anyhow, Captain Toad. Toadette's a playable character, which spawned a very, I'm going to use quotes, fascinating conversation on Gaff about how that's sexist. Because Toadette's captured at the start of the game, apparently, and you have to rescue her, so people are saying that's sexist.
Oh, no.
It's just Nintendo being lazy.
It's damsel in distress. That's just lazy. And
I'm a big fan of... this may sound really strange coming from me, but don't attribute malice to that which you can attribute incompetence. And this is just a simple case of Nintendo can't be bothered to do anything different. So they...
Well, I assume they probably... I mean, what type of story did you want from Captain Toad? I didn't know him and Toadette was a thing. That's new, but... capture people... Like, they just... To them, it's just a means to an end. And even then, it doesn't seem like she's captured the entire game, I guess, which is what the count... It's a really weird conversation.
Yeah, but that's exactly the problem of the damsel in distress concept, that the woman in this case is just a means to an end. That's the whole problem of this concept.
And people are saying it's sexist when I don't think there is a single sexist person that works in Nintendo. They're just not doing anything.
Well, I think... Okay, I don't really want to have this conversation because I think it's also kind of strange coming from this game because it's not like the hero is actually a hero. I mean, it's a guy... He's pretty much defined by his limitations. He can't jump. He runs away from everything. He's a scaredy cat. So it's weird in that sense that it's not like the ultimate male fantasy, because that's usually the other thing with the sexist arguments with video games. It's like it's the dominant male fantasy. With Captain Toad, isn't necessarily what you thrive to be. Nobody thrives to be a coward. Like this is Indiana Jones if he had no backbone, and Toadette is just a starting point for the plot. Like, you know, again, they didn't go into what happened, but it does. She is playable at some point. If she's playable as a captured prisoner trying to escape, or if she's rescued within the first stage or whatever. If you do want to speak about Nintendo's laziness, though, the one thing I did find amusing was the villain's name in this game, which is just Wingo, which is literally just Wing with an O on it. And it's like, okay, we got a new villain. We're just going to throw an O in it. It's the same thing DC does when they want a villain. You throw an O at the end of a word and it sounds really evil and sinister. The other thing, the game's $40, which is, I think, really positive. People wanted it to be discounted, and it is. And I think they said something like that it has over 70 stages. So it's going to be a very, I don't necessarily know if it's going to be a meaty package, but it's not going to be some kind of, you know, really thing you beat in an hour and call it a day. It's also from my personal favorite game development studio in the world right now, so I'm expecting nothing but greatness from it. That's Captain Toad and Smash Brothers. I don't think there was any other... I think there's new Mega Pokemon, but I don't pay attention to
I can tell you which new Mega Pokemon there are. Anybody is interested, because obviously I care about that stuff. I care way too much. There's Mega Pidgeot, which most of the Mega Pokemon stuff tends to be how they get stat changes and ability changes. Hang on, let me look up how those work out, because obviously there are people out there that really care about the metagame, and obviously they want to know how the Mega Pokemon change the metagame, so...
Yeah, I'm the type of person who really, really took a lot of effort to beat the game. I don't care enough about the metagame.
There's Mega Rayquaza, which is... his type stays the same, and he gets a new ability, which is basically the same as... Primal Kyogre and Primal Groudon's, which overrides all weather effects with it's like a windy thing, which affects flying types. There's Mega Pidgeot, which has no guard, which is interesting considering Pidgeot has a whole bunch of moves that have low accuracy but are very useful and very powerful. So what no guard does is it makes it so all of your moves hit, but also all of your opponent's moves will hit regardless of things like protect and stuff. And there's Mega Beedrill, which is just Beedrill with more bloody drills on it, which is bug poison, and it gains adaptability, which is an ability that makes it so the same type attack bonus. So if in Mega Beedrill's case, if you use a bug or poison attack, it will do twice the amount of damage as it normally would do instead of 1 point.
Okay, I'm going to call it next day on this. I'm just falling asleep here. moving on.
My eyes glazed over. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we'll do something. Assassin's Creed Rogue was announced for PC.
Which means that if you want... to be a terrible version, it's going to be Uplay only, and you're better off buying it on a console.
Early 2015, by the way.
Oh, fucking bullshit. I remember when Ubisoft was like... Oh, yeah, we're going to release our PC titles day one. Yeah, fuck off, are you? Can't fight your way out of a wet paper bag most of the time when it comes to PC Ubisoft.
Well, I thought this is more the sense that Martin put this here, because it probably means that we'll get a port of this to the Xbox One and PS4
at some
early
point
next year.
Yeah, it probably will happen, because Ubisoft likes to milk their crap.
Also, yeah, there was this quote out there that Ubisoft, apparently someone asked, does it mean it's coming to Xbox One and PS4? And Ubisoft apparently said, we can talk about that right now. So that
yes,
usually means,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you, oh my gosh, I don't wish ill upon anybody, but I hope this franchise burns. Not necessarily that they're bad games, but I don't need three. Like, they're going to have three versions of the game come out this year, with Rogue, Unity, and then the American Collection, or whatever the hell they're calling that. And then they're going to port it over to the systems early next year, and then they're probably going to do two more next year as well. And it's just like, yeah, at some point, you can only have so many things released in the calendar year before it becomes overkill.
Well, they're releasing more Assassin's Creed games than Activision or Call of Duty games, so they're beating Activision, their own game.
Well, only because Activision could never make that work. It's not for lack of trying. They have had, you know, they had the third-person Sledgehammer game, which got canceled, and I think there was a talk of like an MMO,
right,
Call of Duty game at some point. So it's not for lack of trying, it's just for lack of not being able to find something that actually sticks.
Yeah, I already made my bet with Assassin's Creed. I will not buy that game. And
you got Shadow of Mordor, you got an Assassin's Creed.
Exactly, and a better one at that. And I will probably not buy any future Assassin's Creed game. The only way I will play any of those is if I get one for free.
Yeah. Speaking of, I think we talked about their parody statement last week, and then they tried to backpedal at some point this week, which didn't work out too well for them. What did they say about
Assassin's Creed, you mean?
Yeah. Because I think they tried to backtalk it and say that the person who spoke didn't know what they were talking about, and all this other stuff, but yeah, it's... I don't know.
They are not good at PR.
We said that. Yeah, we said this since E3. Don't talk if you don't have you know, people get upset when people have canned PR responses, but there's a reason those exist, and that's because it doesn't get you in trouble.
Yeah.
And whenever they say something, it always seems to backfire on them. And when they try to correct themselves, it backfires on them. So, I mean, honestly speaking, just stop trying to correct yourself. If just say, we said this last week, I don't know why they had to say like, they didn't want to cause any problems between the PS4 and the Xbox One version, because you know that's still going to cause problems between fans.
All they need to say, is to the producers and stuff is, stop talking about platform differences. Don't do it.
Yeah, and I get that you get asked about it, but again, this is why game developers don't tend to be the people who do PR interviews. You don't get the creative types to do it because they're just going to say what comes to mind. Because wasn't there also, was it Assassin's Creed or was that another game where they were talking about like how they can't do the stuff they wanted to do because of the lack of, like they're more of a CPU-driven engine and these consoles are more GPU-driven or something stupid.
That's the Assassin's Creed thing, still.
Yeah. So, you know, stuff like that is when people pick apart your quote and when people get upset. If you said that we weren't able to do everything we wanted to do in this first year, nobody's going to have an issue with that. That's a nice, clean statement. Once you start trying to break it down technically, that's when people start getting upset. Because you can pick apart that quote, even vague enough that nobody kind of understands what you're saying.
I don't know. Don't say things like that. Just be honest and say things how they are. And don't say things like that.
Well, I mean,
that.
To be fair, they were being honest, and that's the problem.
They are honest in the wrong way, because if that's really the reason, then that's a really shitty reason.
What they have to say is there are no differences between the two platforms, and then they wouldn't have to cause any shit.
There you go. Perfect PR statement. There are no discernible differences between the two versions.
Aside from, exclusive content on
Well, I mean, as far as, like, a technical...
There are no technical differences between the two platforms. Easy.
Yeah, that's a nice, clean statement. Now, granted, you're going to have people saying, what does that mean?
Then don't add things like, because we don't want to cause any controversy and stuff.
That's the problem. Like, if you just said that there's no... different. Like, don't even say the specifics. Just say that there's no discernible technical differences between the two. You're gonna have people say, does that mean that they both run at 1080p? Does that whatever? They can have that discussion, but that doesn't get you in trouble. Once you start breaking it down, and people are, oh, you're holding this game back, and this game, you know, why don't you do parody for that game or that franchise? Then you open up a can of worms.
Yeah. Also, you don't become a punching bag for other companies at that point. That then tout stuff like, hey, our game looks better on one console than the other.
Yep.
Yeah, but again, that has its problems too, because then you're also kind of bad talking to people who want to pick up. I think this is Dragon Edge, right?
But you're not bad mouthing them. It's the truth. If I had both consoles, I would like to know.
If you have both consoles, but you do know we all know that there's console warriors, and you're going to hear people saying, "Oh, why are you talking about the Xbox One now?"
Well, they clearly said that on PS4 it's 1080p and on 1 and 900p.
Yeah.
Where's the problem?
Yeah, that's not the problem. The problem is, I think the way they phrased it is, we're not holding. I forgot, because they had to get graphics and they had to get picture.
No, all they said was we maximize the performance on.
Oh, yeah, there
platform.
We go.
That's what they said.
I guess since we're talking about PR, we might as well get this through real quick. This comes from Phil Spencer of Microsoft.
Yeah.
And this is about their parody clause. Actually, don't get this get the question as much now anymore. I'll be honest. The thing I worry about is I get all these people who buy an Xbox and invest their time and their money in Xbox One. And as millions of people who own Xbox One, I want people to feel like they're first class, because they are. When a third-party game comes out, it comes out on all platforms at the same time, and when indie games come out, I want them to come out, and I want Xbox to feel like it's first-class citizens when an indie game launches. For me, the parody thing is, I own an Xbox One, and I want to work for you to make sure that when great content launches, it's coming to Xbox One and other platforms. You kind of get it at the same time as everybody else does. That said, I have a lot of friends who run small indie studios, and I get the timelines around when they just can't get both games done at the same time, or all three games, four games, depending on how many platforms they're supporting. So I was just saying, let's have a conversation about it's worked. Today, I think we've done a good job working with indies that have strict parity concerns. If it's just a dev issue for them, but I don't want somebody to come and just think I'm going to do a special game on one platform, and then I would get to the Xbox One when I get to it, because I don't think that's right. Because as an Xbox One customer, as Xbox One customers, we want good games as they come out on both platforms, but I also get the, hey, for some guys that I can't afford the time to get both done. So we just want to enter into a conversation with people as they're launching it, and I feel pretty good about the plan. I actually agree with him.
I don't.
I don't think so. Like, if you're not going to make life easy for your developers, then what's the point, you know?
If you think some guys can do it, then why don't you just drop the cloth? It's your own damn fault that you had shitty indie policies to begin with, and that's why they are now coming out on other platforms first. I don't know. That's their problem.
Yeah, but
not the problem of the indie developers.
As a platform holder, I understand what he's saying. It's like you don't want to be seen as the console that gets the games months later or weeks later. You want the people to be like, oh, this game looks cool. It's coming day and date on the Xbox One.
I don't know. And I don't care that much. Like,
Why should I care about him looking bad?
If a developer says to me.
But that's what I'm saying. It's from
his point of view, why does his point of view matter to us? And the indie developer.
Because
here's the thing. If an independent developer.
I agree with his stance. As a platform holder, I agree with trying to have a parity clause where it's like, we want you to try your best to have your games day and date on our system as any other system you release on. I think that is a fair thing to ask for when you're a platform holder.
You buy Goat Simulator exclusively, and you buy Titanfall exclusively, and you buy Threes exclusively. No, I don't buy that. If you want, it's just dumb. Like if you're putting pressure on a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, small team to have a game on more than one system at a time, and they just can't do it. You know, that's really bad because, like, who are you, unless you're going to give them resources to get it done, which they're probably not going to do.
That's a great solution. They can create a tiny indie studio that helps them bring these games over to Xbox One on time. But I do think, as a platform holder, it makes sense to want to thrive for everybody to release their games at the same time on your system. And it sounds like he's basically saying he just wants people to talk to him to see if it's feasible.
But
if it's not,
the issue is
then
that
it's not. But
now he says it like this, but it's their own damn fault this problem even exists. And then you go and say, like, well, if you don't come out on our platform at the same time, then you better make a special version for us later on and stuff like that. And for indie developers, that is hell. It's extra work.
Well, I mean, it's
and those guys are small.
It is extra work, and their prerogative. They don't have to release the game on the Xbox One. I'm just saying, from his point of view, it makes sense what he's saying. If it's overall the best thing for the industry, maybe not. But from his point of view, from Microsoft's point of view, it makes sense to be seen as a comparable service. You want those games to come out the same time as yours. On the counter, in realistic terms, it does hamper it, because, as you said, what's going to happen is either people aren't going to do it, or people just aren't going to release Xbox One versions of those games. There are enough avenues nowadays for them to release their games elsewhere. PlayStation 4 and Vita do well with indie games. There's still Steam and PC. You can do Wii U. So there are enough places for people to sell indie games that they don't necessarily need Xbox One. And I think this concept made a lot more sense when they were the market leaders. Now they're in second place.
They never were market leaders.
It's probably not. Well, I mean, they were marketed as far as support went, last gen. Like, I mean, it wasn't the number one console, but it was always treated as it.
That's only because they think
so
the,
it
system,
made
the 360 was easier to develop for. And now what they've done is they have, from what I understand anyway, they have a system that is slightly more nuanced than, say, the PS4. And now they're punishing people, they're punishing the developers because of their hardware design choices by saying...
Oh, it's not just the hardware design. The problem also was that they didn't have a self-publishing thing in place.
Yeah. And like every other platform. And now they're punishing the small developers who don't really get a choice because they have limited resources. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. Because it is them punishing the developers. I'm sure indie developers would love to get their games on anything that they can get their games on.
But pressure them into time frames that they might not be able to hit.
You know, Sony has, look at the indie support for the Vita, you know. Nobody would have been able to tell that the Vita would have gotten that much support from the indies when they released it. And yet, you know, Sony says, look, we've got some people to help you get your game on the Vita. We'll give you some tools to get it on there, you know, and you can release it whenever you like. We don't care. You know, just if you get some games on there, that would be awesome. And look how much it worked out for them. I mean, okay, the Vita hasn't sold a fuck ton as it was, you know, as anybody would have hoped, but people are still putting their games on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying, I get their stance. It may not be the most intelligent thing, but I understand what they're trying to go for.
I like Phil Spencer, but I don't like what comes out of his mouth because he just says a whole bunch of crap. You know, he talks.
Well, I mean, you just said you wanted to tell the truth, and that is what he tells the truth. It's not a truth you want to hear, but it's
the
not
problem
like he's sugarcoating
isn't that
it. It's
he
not.
Is telling the truth. The problem is that it's a shitty policy.
The truth is a shit truth, and it shouldn't be a truth. It should be. They should just say, whenever, you know, if you want to get your game on Xbox One, take your time. And we'll help you out, you know? But they're not doing either of those, and that's bollocks.
Okay. Anything else you folks want to talk about before we wrap up?
Not really. If you want me to, I can get a Borderlands critical review up, because it's coming up right.
Oh, I think you're going to talk about Pokemon again. I guess... just real quick, that I guess they said that Yamcha said that GTA 7 may come out in 2015 or 2016.
No, the real funny thing is the quote in general. I thought it was when he said like, "The PS4 is so much easier to work with than the PS3, so expect our GTA 7 in 2015 or 2016."
Sooner or later.
The first thing that's funny is it's easier, so you think it's faster. So that time frame, in a sense, is not that fast. Secondly, that he can't even get the year down. And it might possibly be longer because you know how GT games are developed. It's crazy.
Yeah, we will talk about that off air.
It doesn't take them 6 years to release a game again, you know.
I don't think Sony. Well, I was going to say I don't think Sony has it in them, but we still have to ask Guardian somewhere else. Yeah. An agent. I don't know anybody ever talks about agent anymore, but.
Well, you have to ask Rockstar about agent.
Yes, and if you ask Rockstar, it's Sony's deal, and they go back. It's like a tennis match. At some point, somebody's going to answer the question. real quick, since we didn't mention it, and I was reminded since we were talking about PlayStation, Sony announced the PlayStation Experience, which is a two-day fan event in Las Vegas this December, which sounds really cool. I was at New York Comic Con and I heard some of the people in the press complaining because they're like, it's insane that Sony's giving them only 2 months to kind
How
of plan a trip
to
Vegas.
How long does it take to plan a flight and then get a hotel?
Well, not necessarily that, because especially for Americans, that's between Thanksgiving and Christmas, so that's probably time you booked off already, or time you had to travel and taking money out of that. you know, you have, you know, like most of these people, I assume, have actual jobs or they do other things. And it's not like video game industry. Video game is a lucrative industry where you can, like, oh, we'll just have a third vacation. And then you have to, like, you have to plan who's going, who's going to cover it. You don't know what games are there. So a lot of these events, they are planned months in advance. I mean, like, there's a reason, like, I know, like, you know when E3 is at the end of E3 at the end of the previous year. Like, I know when New York Comic Con is next year. They tell you that stuff ahead of time, so you kind of get all your ducks in a row. And having less than 2 months to plan a trip, especially during the busy holiday season in Las Vegas, is probably not the wisest thing. But I do think the idea itself is novel. And I'm kind of curious to see what happens for it. Sadly enough, I don't think anybody from here can go. I think the only person who technically could go is Jason, and that would be kind of odd in many ways. So yes, if anybody does go, I'm really curious
about
it.
Probably will be new announcements from that coming as well, I would suspect. I think they said already, right? That something new will be there.
Yeah, I think it was you who said that. You who said that you thought this kind of put a dagger in the VGAs for this year.
Yeah,
somebody on my Twitter said that. And, I mean, the VGAs were kind of announced this year.
Honestly, who cares at this point?
Yeah. Yeah, the way they were announced, I don't really have the highest confidence for them, since it was a response to a tweet to Jeff Keighley over the weekend, and not necessarily a formal announcement. Anyhow, we will be back next week with impressions of new actually, hopefully we get Anthony. I know he's playing a new indie game for the Wii U. Martin, for some reason, is not playing Space Hulk.
What am I not playing?
Space Hulk. Or, no, it's Brawl Buddies. Whatever that game I sent you.
Yeah, because it's a local multiplayer game. I have friends.
Get friends.
Get more.
Then you're good to go.
But I don't have 4 controllers.
How many DualShock 4s do you have?
What do I have? I have 2.
Well, you've got 2 there. If you've got a 360 controller lying around, then there's another one.
Yeah, but I need all DualShock 4s. Because it's on PS4.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Anyhow, we'll be back next week. So for Martin, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 157.